TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 612, and I'm Libby, your host. And this week, we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write reviews for 6 Degrees of Geek.
You've got Malik El-Amin here. I'm artistic director of Griot Theater.
This is Tom. I chair the Department of Visual and Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida and host the Screen Tom podcast on iTunes and Spotify.
Hi, this is Yu Sun, and I'm a costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
All right, guys, let's start off with the news. Tom, tell us what you got.
At Amazon, they are developing a Reacher spinoff purportedly centering on Neely, which is cool, played by Maria Stem.
Yes.
And then their Freevee show, Bosch Legacy, will end with season 3. At AMC, Anne Rice's The Talamasca series has cast Nicholas Denton from the Dangerous Liaisons series as series lead Guy and Anatoly, I guess. Apple TV Plus has picked up Acapulco for season 4 and given a series order to Widow's Bay from creator Katie Dippold. Fox has announced that 911 Lone Star will end with the upcoming season 5. At HBO, drama! Game of Thrones creator and author George R.R. Martin called out changes in House of the Dragon season 2 and warns of toxic tweaks to the upcoming seasons 3 and 4. HBO responds, the showrunner, quote, was required to make difficult choices, end quote. That basically means they don't give a F.
And just to interject on that, he then deleted the post where he criticized them.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing left. You can do that. Nothing goes away from the internet. Somebody screenshots it. Stupid.
Well, I mean, I just want to comment real quick because I really feel that I am very happy I'm not watching House of the Dragon. That's all that means to me.
That makes two of us.
Are we going to, for commentary, I read his issues. It doesn't materially change the experience of what we witnessed, I don't believe. So I understand that he feels that the changes are toxic. I do not.
He needs to finish the first set of Game of Thrones books.
There you go. Yeah, that too.
Hulu is given an early pickup for Only Murders in the Building for season 5.
Wow.
Kate Winslet will star in The Spot, a new series from writer Ed Solomon and A24. At Max, more drama. Michael Crichton's widow is suing over The Pitt because they tried to revive ER and she wanted too much money. So they basically created their own emergency room drama, also with Noah Wiley from the producers of ER. It's like, dude, lady, your dead husband didn't invent emergency rooms. It's not set in the same city, and they're not
but
the same character.
But that still feels...
No, I gotta come back. That is absolute theft. They tried to do ER. She wouldn't agree to their terms. And they say, we're going to have an ER. It's not just one actor. It's multiple actors from the original ER show.
The only one that's been signed from the original. I've seen the cast list. The only person from the original show is Wiley. Everybody else is new.
That's not what I read. There were multiple.
Guys, let's go to the news. We can argue off podcast. How about
MGM Plus has announced Beacon 23 and The Winter King are not returning after 2 seasons apiece. They may be shopped around. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Oh, please.
Well, I want to say Beacon 23 needed to be canceled after season 1 because I sat through season 2 and I'm mad about it. Winter King, I can't say the same thing because I didn't watch it, but I Beacon 23 needed to be canceled. All right, continue.
Yes.
You should have watched House of the Dragon instead.
NBC has announced that The Tonight Show will be moving to 4 nights a week. So another nail in the coffin of broadcast television. Kelly Giddish will appear in multiple SVU season 26 episodes as Rollins. Netflix has acquired the feature film Maria with Angelina Jolie. Lots of Oscar buzz. She's playing Maria Callas. The Duffer Brothers' next show, The Bureaus, The Burrows, from creators Jeffrey Addis and Will Matthews, has cast Alfred Molina, Gina Davis, Alfre Woodard, Dennis O'Hare, Clark Peters, and Bull Pullman.
Nice.
Wow.
I'd watch that, but I'm not paying for $25 for Netflix for that. Asa Butterfield, Molly Windsor-Fraffy, Siobhan Finnernan, and Christopher Eccleston will star in Julie Geary's Netflix series Out of the Dust. And they've given a straight-to-series order for Twilight's animated series Midnight Sun, which is a retelling.
Who asked for this? Sorry.
Stephanie, the writer's agents, probably.
Well,
it's,
I mean,
it's
the
book
thing
that it basically covers the first book, but from Edward's perspective.
Right. It's the same story.
Yeah.
But now it's animated. Like, no.
And
sorry.
Good luck getting the original cast back for that. Netflix also canceled Dead Boy Detectives. Paramount Network is eyeing a surprise Yellowstone season 6 order and is negotiating with Kelly Riley and Cole Hauser to continue. Paramount Plus, meanwhile, has announced that Matthew Fox will join The Madison, which is the next spinoff of Yellowstone. Joel McHale will guest in Yellowjackets season 3. Jermaine Fowler has been cast opposite Tracy Morgan in the multicam comedy series Crutch. And Melissa McCarthy and Clive Owen will lead the limited series on the JonBenet Ramsey case. And Peacock's been busy. They've greenlit a series adaptation of The Burbs with Kiki Palmer as the lead. Seth MacFarlane and Brian Grazer are producing. Straight to series order for espionage thriller Ponies with Emilia Clarke as lead. Devil in Disguise, the John Wayne Gacy limited series, has added 5 new series regulars, including Gabriel Luna, Michael Angarano, Chris Sullivan, and James Badge Dale. And Dean Norris has been promoted to series regular on Law & Order Organized Crime. Roku has acquired the U.S. rights for the Lionsgate-produced Irish detective series Borderline. And Keshet International is producing a show called a rom-com series called Save the Date, which will star Tomer Capone as a besotted suitor.
Only thing I want to add, because I just saw this, is apparently Michael Keaton is changing his name back to his original name, which I didn't know was a thing. And they were like, the reason that he never went by his original name is because there was already a person
Michael
with that
Douglas.
Exact Michael Douglas. His real name is Michael Douglas. And I was like, wait, what? So Michael Keaton is real.
Michael Douglas Keaton. Like, he can't go by Michael Douglas.
He can't go by Michael Douglas.
I know, but so what he's doing is he's going by Michael Keaton Douglas.
Right.
That's what he's doing. Because then his name is still Michael Douglas, which is apparently his name. And I was like, wait, what? So I just think that kind of just blew my mind out of nowhere. And it, I
kind of late,
dude. Note, but I know. It's like he's what, 70 something? He's like, yeah, I just want to be known by my real name.
He knows spring chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean,
it's
like,
pretty
look,
normal. It's pretty normal.
Why didn't he do that back in the day?
I get it. But yeah, it's just kind of crazy that two actors who are basically the same age have the same name and they're both really famous.
Michael Douglas is older, man.
Yeah.
Is how old is
he? He's probably.
Oh, he's older than Michael Keaton?
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay. My bad. I thought they were. I mean, I just knew they were really old.
No, he's about 10 years older. He's about.
He's
got to
be like 80, early 80s.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's just a quick side note that I just saw right before the podcast. And it just kind of was like, blew my mind a little. All right. Let's start off with the shows. First up, we're going to dive back into Lady in the Lake. I was going to call it Lady of the Lake. I was like, she's going to give somebody a sword. Lady in the Lake is a totally different other thing. I cannot participate because I still only watched the first two, but all the rest of you guys finished. And so because the new seasons are starting, new shows are starting, we're trying to wrap up as many of the old shows that we were talking about as possible. So I'm going to let Malik lead this out and tell us what you thought of the show overall and the episodes that we haven't talked about.
So at a very high level, I'm glad that this series was made. I think that it did some things that a lot of television that we've seen hasn't done. So that's my overall. I'm glad that this series was made. Like anything else, it has its pros and its cons. In terms of kind of where we left off from the first two episodes, We actually, I know one of the comments about the first two episodes is that it didn't deal as much with the murder mystery as one might have expected. The rest of the season does. And I think it does it in a really interesting way. I know we're not in spoiler alert land here, so we're assuming that everyone is watching this has seen the show. I really appreciated how they left us clues and developed the revelation that the lady in the lake is not actually who we are led to believe the lady in the lake is.
Yes.
And I'm happy to say that I had suspicions early, and then I decided probably two episodes before it was revealed exactly who the lady in the lake actually was. I thought that was cool. I thought it was clever. I thought the breadcrumbs were sufficient without being too easily predictable. For those who don't know what we're talking about, you assume that the central character of Cleo is the lady in the lake, and she's talking to us from the dead. We realize along the way that she's not actually the lady in the lake. Her friend, who was the singer and the drug addict, ends up being the lady in the lake. And the reason why Cleo is talking to us from the dead is because she's actually telling her story to Natalie Portman after the fact. And I think that was a nice device planted early in the season and revealed in some interesting ways along the journey. We have to talk about episode 6 because many of us here had some sidebar conversations about episode 6. Episode 6 is the central reason why I appreciate this series. Episode 6 takes us essentially in the mind of the Maddie character. She ends up, I'm telling things out of order, but she ends up getting stabbed by the mother of the murder victim in a way that escalates quickly but really interestingly.
Not the murder victim, no.
I'm sorry, suspect. I used the wrong word. Yes. Suspect. And what's interesting is that, and so she gets stabbed at the end of one episode. It's unclear what her status is. And I said to my wife, she's only mostly dead, which means she's partially alive. And that turns out to be true.
She's Natalie Portman, number one on the call sheet. They're not going to kill her. They don't have that kind of cojones.
So the
not in episode 5, anyway.
Yes. So in the following episode, which is 6, she's in the hospital kind of having these delusions. And delusions are made manifest in really interesting, I think, cinematic ways. They involve music, they involve dancing, they involve things that step away from reality that help us get into the mind of both her subconscious, but also just her untethered, almost, what do you call them, like fever dreams while she's recovering in the hospital. And then they have a really interesting segue from the fever dreams back into reality. So that happens to actually be my favorite episode of the entire series. And what I love about it is, unlike, say, going back to Buffy the Vampire Slayer or even Doctor Who, where they have a musical episode, this was not that. This was showing us the mind of the character in some really interesting ways. So there were weaknesses in the show. Actually, in terms of the resolution in the final episode, I was not satisfied with the final episode. I think they either ran out of time or didn't put the good writers on that episode. I'm not sure what happened, but compared to the first 6 episodes, the finale, which is 7, was actually a bit of a letdown for me. But I'm all there for it because of the journey and episode 6. So I'm happy they made the show. I'll pass it over to whoever wants to jump in.
And now for something completely different. I didn't hate the show. I didn't love the show. My problem with the show, it's all over the place stylistically, tonally. It can't decide who the main character is. And we switch from episode to episode, which I don't think is a strength. Because you've got two strong leads. I felt like they needed a better writing staff to pull this off well. Episode 6, I found jarring. And after I watched it, I went to see what people on IMDb thought, and they didn't like it either because they voted it way down. I think the big problem is that when you're not, even though technically it's a fever dream, not magical realism, it kind of comes off like magical realism. And plot-wise, it didn't advance the plot that much. And I think they would have been better served because the last episode, which was a full hour, crammed in all kinds of plotty stuff, and it felt like you're rushing to a conclusion. I think they could have done some dream sequences. I'm not a huge fan of dream sequences in most narrative TV shows, unless it's built baked into the cake. William Goldman calls them dream sequences, flashbacks, and a prom dress. But yeah, I just thought it was all over the place. I really like Natalie Portman as an actor. I can understand why she'd want to play an interesting character. The way this character was written, I still kind of don't like her because she doesn't really care about anybody but herself. At the expense of everything. I mean, I can understand the time period. There's just, I want to, and I don't know how much of this is from the book, because I looked at some of the reviews of the books and they said the book was also sprawling. But I just thought a lot of it didn't work for me. The two biggest dangling plot threads, who killed the little girl? Was it the black dude at the jazz
It was
club?
the mother.
The mother.
It was the one who stabbed her.
Oh,
You think
so,
that it's
okay.
you think it's him, and he's the one who
Okay,
kidnapped the girl, but
okay.
then the
So,
mother ki the was the one who killed her.
gotcha. Because in the histrionics, that just seemed to come out of nowhere. It was weird. And the other plot thing that isn't resolved, and I Googled it, and they didn't have a definitive answer. Who is Seth's dad? Although evidently, it seems like it could be David Corenswet's character, the new Superman. But man, that was, I mean, and we know that his dad was a creeper and evidently raped Maddie and, either forced her to get an abortion or something. I don't know. I just thought the way that they, resolve some of the, I Googled to find out who is Seth Schwartz's real father, and they didn't give definitive answers on multiple websites. So confusion is the enemy of clarity. I just thought this, I mean, style, they had a great cast. They had a great cast, but some of the plot elements were very, very, for the 1960s era, kind of cringy. The white female lead dancing with her black boyfriend to Me and My Shadow was a little ooh for me.
I didn't like that plot point
I
either
just
in
didn't like
episode
that
two.
too.
I thought, Libby, you didn't even watch what he referred to.
No,
I
but
didn't see the dance. No, but I
the
saw that
episode,
they were going to become a couple. I saw that.
and that becomes a
Yes.
major plot thread because
Yeah. I'm just
he's,
saying I could kind of guess where that was going, and I wasn't interested in saying it. So.
yeah.
Well, the thing is, I agree with Tom that it was not there were a lot of issues that were not particularly coherent, and it was a little, slapdash here and there. I think part of the reason for that is because it was taken from a novel, and actually, what they did was w it was something that I admire. They improved the characters from the novel. It's mostly told from Maddie's point of view. She sort of overwhelms everything in the novel, and the characters around her, and particularly Cleo. The so-called lady in the lake, who turned out not to be, she's very sketchily drawn. She's barely a character at all, and they gave her so much more to do in this, an agency and a voice of her own, and fleshed out her and the other characters around her. And I maybe they weren't completely successful in doing that, but I think that they definitely had their hearts in the right place and improved upon the story by doing that, because I can't imagine this story without Cleo's voice and without really re being able to relate to her as a person and as a character and being invested in where she goes and what she does, which in the novel is a complete mystery. We only know it from Maddie's point of view. We know she's not the lady in the lake, but we don't know what happens to her. So I think, that investment is a definite improvement over the source material. And I did really enjoy it. I think it's a little bit slower than it needs to be. I was not confused by the plot points, but I could see where, you know, they should have tightened things up and clarified things. You know, Maddie is not a particularly likable character. She's not warm and cuddly, but then on the same vein, I don't know that if she was a male character, we would be quite so critical about her ambition and her focus. You know, if we maybe just, you know, would allow that if she was a man, but as a woman, it's like, well, isn't she supposed to be more motherly and things like that? And her son, you know, is a complete pain in the ass throughout the whole thing, but you learn eventually that the reason he's so awful to her is because he found her diaries and he knows he's not his father's son. He knows what mm-hmm. happened. And at that point, it doesn't really make him any nicer. He's still pretty awful, but you can understand why he's so awful to her. And by the end of the series, they do kind of come to an understanding, if not, you know, really loving mother and son.
Ish.
Yeah, sort of ish, you know. But you know, it's very much of its time. It shows the racism, the sexism, and you know, all of that is, I think, legitimate. I did love episode 6. I thought that it captured, particularly at the beginning. First of all, you're always going to get my attention when you do anything musical, because I'm just a sucker for that. But before they even got into this like Esther Williams like musical sequence, they really captured, I felt, dream logic and dream reality. It's like when she was going through the halls and the scenes just change and she just doesn't even react to it because that's what happens in a dream. It was like, yes, that's exactly what dreams are like. Thank you for capturing that. I thought they did an excellent job, and the whole musical sequence I thought was beautifully staged. So, you know, I did figure out what was going on round about the time that they got to where they should have shown us the flashback of the murder, and they skipped right past it. And I was like, that's a big skip. Why didn't we see that? And I started, you know, it made me think that something fishy was going on. And then when they actually show what's happening, you don't see the face of the person that's being dumped. And I was like, oh yeah, it's totally her. So it was not surprising to me, but I thought that they still did it well.
So let me, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so I do agree with Tom that it's not perfect, but I overall really enjoyed this.
Okay, I do think we need to wrap this up. We still have 5 more shows to talk about. Next up, we're going to talk Bad Monkey, episode 4 and 5. And what I'd like to say is I was getting into Bad Monkey, and by the time we got to episode 3, I was like, oh, this show's pretty good. And then they did something in episode 4 that I was like, what are you guys doing? Which is, they turned around and told everything that we learned in the first 3 episodes from the villain's point of view, which I think was a huge mistake, mainly because all the information we as the audience, if we're paying attention, we would have figured out, right? So we didn't really need to see everything they showed us. And any mystery that you have with your villains, they erase that mystery, because now I'm like, oh, these guys are just dumb. So like any kind of interest that I would have had for them as villains is totally erased now. And I thoroughly did not enjoy episode 4 at all. If I didn't like the first 3 episodes as much as I did, I would have bailed after episode 4. But wow. I was like, all right, it was, for me, I thought it was really bad writing. It was a really bad decision to change the point of view to basically narcissistic sociopaths and dumb ones at that. So there was nothing, it wasn't even like, oh my God, look at their brilliant plan. It's like, oh my God, you guys are dumb. Like, that was really what I got out of episode 4. And go ahead, Tom.
A little bit of that trophy wife goes way too far.
Way, 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 way too far.
I mean, she's
and she's such a narcissist.
The actor is fine at making me hate her guts. Hating the character's guts. She's just so self-centered and manipulative and like,
But manipulative in a way that's not even smart. It just makes him look dumber. Like, she's not a brilliant manipulator at all. She's so obvious.
But she thinks she is.
She thinks she is, but she's so obvious at what she's doing every step of the way. It makes the husband seem dumber, like, every step of the way.
I didn't have a problem with it.
I think that that was part of the point, because up until now, because we didn't know anything about them, we think of them as being, you know, villainous masterminds, and they must have millions of dollars at their disposal, and they're making all these plans and doing all these things. And it turns out they're just these two little schmucks who happen to be incredibly sociopathic, and they fit each other, you know, but they really are just really penny ante con artists. And,
but that doesn't elevate the show, is what I'm saying. It de-elevates the show. Yes,
I think it's just a story. I think that's their story. Like,
that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm not expecting the show to be about, like, you know, a grand Bond-like conspiracy.
Yeah.
This is characters, you know, doing what they do.
Exactly.
And I'm in it really mainly because I love the characters and I love the humor of the piece. And
I think the main characters, but I do not like these characters at all. And they made me spend a full hour with characters I do not like.
Right. But I think that, at least for me, I liked getting the background on them because it does flesh out, these are the people, these are the so-called masterminds that we're worried about, and they're idiots and they're awful. And that was fun.
We didn't need an hour.
I wouldn't want an entire series of them, but one episode of them was fine for me.
I thought it was too much.
I didn't mind at all.
The structural problem is
flashbacks bring your present day narrative to a screeching halt. So you could have skipped episode 4 and not lost anything in the, you know, in the real storyline. I mean, whatever you needed would probably have been in the previously on. So, and it wasn't that much fun because those characters are not that much fun. They're just dumb. Yeah, I didn't enjoy them at all.
Yeah,
Yusun was trying to speak a little bit.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to agree with Allison that I don't think that, for me, they don't need to be, it's just seasoning. It's just like texture. It's just like giving me, more detail into the characters. I don't care whether they were smart or dumb. In this case, they're dumb. They're sociopathic. I personally tend to like flashbacks if done well. And I know you're going to argue that this wasn't done well, but my point for me is that, like, I liked the details that it gave me, like how he was best friends with the guy that he worked with, you know what I mean? And that he was actually really sad about having to kill him. He wasn't completely sociopathic. And I love that scene where, like, he knew he was going to be killed, so he, like, closed his eyes, like, right before, you know, his friend came out. I thought that was, not elegance in the scene, but there was, like, it
pathos.
Pathos, you know, and for me, this show, you know, it gave it a little bit of texture. Like, it isn't just a silly show. It isn't just about the characters. It, like, showed me that he was emotionally invested, that when he came out and he, like, leaned against the car and he was like, oh my God, I just killed my best friend.
Yeah, but that actually makes it even worse because he allowed his stupid girlfriend to make him kill his best friend.
That does not.
Libya, don't just argue with her. Let her express it.
He's beleaguered. He's like, you know, he's conflicted. He has issues. He's not just a one-note villain. He's not a mustache twirler. He's not just a sociopath. These guys aren't, like, true romance, you know, or natural born killers on a spree. They have they're human, and they're weak, and they have issues, and they have feelings. Like, for me, I thought I didn't think that it ground the narrative to a halt. I thought that it was a moment where you just go back, like Rashomon, and you show me you know, the how it played out, you know, in the way that, like, you know, and it even got a little bit of gruesome, which I didn't need it to be, but, like, you know, when he was, like, mangling the arm in the shower, and, you know, and that was, like, I was like, ah, I didn't need to see that, like, so, but again, it made the show, it gave the show flavor, like, lots of different aspects to it. It was, it had pathos, it had, it was gritty, it had a humor, it had this and that. I really didn't mind episode four at all. I didn't think it was a great episode. I didn't think, oh my God, this was amazing, but I thought it fit in perfectly well, and I liked that it gave me background, you know, on all the characters. And yes, she isn't the most interesting character, and she's very much a trope. But I thought she was well, it was well acted. I thought she played it, you know, she played it as well as, you know, anyone can play that trope of the girlfriend who's sociopathic and wants the boyfriend to, you know, go out of her, his way for her, you know. I mean, it was fine. I don't think that it, I don't think it deserves the hatred that you guys, you know, brought it. I thought it helped the, you know, the show out.
Malik, go ahead, Malik, because we still got to keep moving. We're behind now.
You have five, right? Episode five?
Yeah, go ahead. Episode five.
I don't have anything to say about it. I was, yeah.
Oh, you didn't see it? You didn't see episode five?
No.
Oh. I thought you... Okay.
I thought episode five. And I liked... Go ahead.
All I was going to say is I'm trying to get through this as fast as possible, but... episode five was, I felt like, back on track, and we actually had some movement in the story, and it felt like the show again. So I wasn't quitting the show now. I was like, all right, fine, I guess I'll stay. Episode five was still kind of on the mediocre side. Like, it was back to where I wanted the show to be, but I didn't feel like a lot of movement happened in five as well. Like, it was okay, but it was definitely an improvement for four for me, so it was enough for me to keep going. I can't even actually remember, like,
he went to her house and he had, like, dinner. Like, that to me was unnecessary.
Right, that's why I said the plot doesn't actually move that much, because he meets the mom, and then they're like, oh, if we get his thumb, unbury it, then we can use it to unlock the phone. I was like, yeah, that's not going to work, because he has to have an electrical current from the finger. So, no, that doesn't work, guys. So I was like, no, no, no.
They cheated it, though.
I know they cheated it, and I didn't appreciate that, because I was like, that's not how that works. That's why you can't wear gloves when you try to unlock your phone with your thumb. Doesn't work. Anyway. Go ahead, Tom, anybody thoughts on episode five?
I thought five was back on track. I thought the dinner with Rosa's family was pretty funny, and her mom giving him the stink eye the whole time.
I still didn't really understand why his mom was so anti him.
Because she knew he was bad news, which he basically had told Rosa.
He is bad news, but I mean, I don't think she didn't know anything about him. He literally showed up at the door. And she was like, immediately, I hate you. Like, he hadn't even opened his mouth yet. And she was like, nope, I'm going to block this relationship. And I was like, whoa, like, that was a little much.
Well, let's face it. If Vince Vaughn shows up at your door, aren't you going to have that reaction? I mean, really.
Anyway, I don't have anything more to say about Bat Monkey at this point. I think we can move on. Unless somebody has anything stellar, because five was just back on track with nothing spectacular for me. All right, let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk The Umbrella Academy. We're going to talk the last two episodes, or last episode? We only
last
on
two
one
episodes
or,
of the last series. Two
of the series. And I know that it had mixed reactions online. Oh, good Lord, everybody's dropping out. Does that mean that only the three of Malik, did you see Umbrella Academy?
Unfortunately, yes.
Ooh, I was just gonna say,
snap!
the internet did not like the finale, and I didn't mind it, because I was like, you guys expected a happy ending? Were you not watching the show? This was never gonna be a happy ending. So I didn't have a problem with basically they just kind of blew up the show at the end. I thought that was okay. However, I will say, that the episode before the season finale was like a weird choice, because it was very much like a weirdly like standalone episode that really didn't advance the plot. Like, the two brothers were hanging out at the FBI and they had this dance montage where they kind of just killed all these agents. And I was like, what's this got to do with the story? And then Klaus is buried and the sister has to go find him. That still doesn't really advance the main story. And so, like, the only story that's advancing the main plot is Victor and their dad going to the mall or whatever and investigating.
Well, but
like,
all the others were just sort of wrapping up what their little side quests were, so they could get them all together in the same room. I mean, that's really pretty much what that episode was.
I get it, but it did, and here's the thing: I enjoyed it because I like the character. So I didn't mind seeing these story threads wrap up, but it did feel like the momentum had kind of paused on that episode. And then everything felt a little rushed on 6. That's all I'm saying. Go ahead,
so,
Malik.
Episode 5, Klaus was into forced prostitution.
Yeah.
That's what that storyline was.
I agree.
And I'm like, and they're trying to make it funny. It's comical forced prostitution, which is not a really interesting story to me. I thought that episode was entirely uninteresting. I'm trying to remember.
Well, I mean, no, but is actually also... 5 is actually when he's buried. 5 is, he's like, that's already happened.
He fell into the grave.
Okay.
And
we've already done the forced prostitution before that. All right, so but is 5 the episode where 5 and Lila are spending time together?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that also, I don't know if we're ever supposed to like 5, but if I would have ever liked him the last 2 episodes, I am so, not only do I dislike him, I'm also uninterested in him, his journey, or his fate at that point. He spends this time, they try to give us 7 years of him so they fall in love together. And then he hides from her the fact that he actually
knows how
to get home, so that he can spend more time with her when she could choose whether she wants to go back to her life and her family
and her
or
children.
Not.
Yeah.
Her family, yeah. So so they do that. And then in the finale, when they come back, he's got an attitude. Like, he ain't the one that just been tripping and messing with his brother's wife. Like, it was just really kind of revolting to me. Not that they chose to tell that story, but then his reaction to his return, I'm just like, I don't care about that dude, what happens to him or anything. I generally didn't like this season. There were a few moments in the season that I found were either funny or interesting because of the action. I didn't like how Jean with the G was killed and replaced. I thought that was uninteresting as well. The logic, there were so many logic holes in the finale and probably in much of the series that, like, I can understand build the world and tell me what the rules are and I'll follow those rules. But this whole season, the logic of the rules that they established kept changing, getting unexplained. I thought it was pretty horrible. The only thing that I thought was I actually kind of liked the final moments of the episode when they were getting ready to die. I thought that was interesting. Practically everything else I didn't care about, was bored by, didn't want to watch it. But it was kind of cool when they were like, all right, we're doing this, and you get to see their final moments dealing with that reality, still joking with each other, teasing each other. I kind of like that moment, but that was about it for me.
I like that moment as well. Allison, your thoughts?
For me, I mean, I thought, first of all, this season was better than last season. Last season kind of lost me for a lot of reasons. And I thought that they actually were better with this season and wrapping things up and explaining what the reason was for everything, the mystery between, you know, what happened with Ben and, you know, why their father was on Earth in the first place and everything that we'd seen at the beginning with the little spores and the woman mm-hmm. dying and all of that did get explained and wrapped up, which was nice. But, you know, this is Umbrella Academy and it is just everything is everywhere all the time. It's messy storytelling. It always has been. And I think they did about as well as I could have expected them to do, which means that, you know, it's not going to be perfect and I'm not going to love every minute. And there are certain, you know, outcomes of characters I'm not going to agree with, but overall, I did applaud them tying up as many loose ends as they did and going back, in fact, to the beginning and explaining, you know, why things were the way things were.
I really like the wife.
I liked her a lot.
I like her explanation of why she did what she did to end the world, because she needed her husband to understand how selfish he was being.
Yes. There's a cost for things. She believed that she had no business being alive. And in her opinion, this reality was not a legitimate reality. Mm-hmm. And so what we see at the beginning is kind of, and again, this is very much in keeping with the Umbrella Academy, where you said yourself, you don't expect a happy ending out of this. But what they did do, at least, was give us an opportunity to see these characters be willingly self-sacrificial. Right. Because they really are making the ultimate sacrifice. They're not just dying. They are unexisting.
Right.
No one will ever know who. Sorry?
Did the two of you understand from the wife's explanation that by allowing the world to end, they would solve all the timelines?
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't get that when she said it. I only got it when the siblings figured that out.
No.
When
she
said it, it didn't make any sense to me.
It totally made sense, because especially if you understood that everything that's happened from season one is about her husband trying to bring her back into existence.
Right.
Everything he's ever done.
What I'm fine with. I'm talking about the idea that when all the Marigold and the other substance meet each other, it'll be as though none of them existed. Did you get that from what she said?
Yes.
Yeah, because she was deliberately letting this go. She was this was intentional.
I understand that.
Her initial creation, not of Marigold, but of, and I'm blanking on the name of the its opposite.
The other substance,
it's antimatter equivalent.
Right.
She created that and it destroyed her world, and that was a mistake. But everything else that he has done since then to bring her back has just compounded those mistakes, and
right.
she wants to put an end to it.
I understand all of what you just said. I won't beat the dead horse. I didn't get what she expected to happen beyond the world ending. The idea that the siblings discussed that not only would the world end, but they would disappear, and that would
because they are a product of this alternate reality. And if they uncreate themselves, if all of this never happened, then they could never happen.
Right.
So they're bringing it back to a world in which their father never came to Earth.
So they basically are erasing. So for,
they're
for
erasing
the people
everything.
Who did, so the people who didn't like
it.
The Umbrella.
I'm saying I didn't understand it when she said
it.
That's
I did.
All.
We get that. All I'm saying is for the people who didn't like Umbrella Academy, now it didn't happen. So there you go. But
I did like the touch at the end. First of all, they did save some of the people who they love by sending them back.
Yeah, sending them to another place.
But
there
was that last little shot that we see of marigolds blooming, little magical marigolds blooming, and there's seven of them. And that sort of represents the siblings at the very end.
It was sweet.
It was a nice touch.
Yeah, it was a nice, sweet thing. I enjoyed this. I enjoyed it. So I'm giving it a thumbs up for me.
Yeah, me too.
next up, we're going to talk about The Bear, and we're going to wrap up this season of The Bear. And the thing that I am going to preamble with this is I do not like ending on a cliffhanger, especially because I really didn't feel like they had to. It felt like they took this storyline that they set up at the beginning, which is Sydney going to go off on her own? And when is she has to make this decision, and she needs to talk to Carmi about it. And they set this up in like episode three, right? Three or four, something early in the season that they set this up. And they've had this going for the entire season. And it feels like all they've been doing is stretching it and stretching it. So it doesn't feel like a natural cliffhanger. It feels like a very fabricated cliffhanger. And this is the first time that one, that the Bear season hasn't ended clean. So I don't like that. And two, it feels very artificial. Like very
so you,
much.
You skipped to this. You skipped to the last episode.
Well, I'm not skipping so much as I'm just telling you the overall arc of how I feel about the season, which is they stretched stuff when they didn't need to stretch it, and so that has clouded how I feel about the last two episodes, in that they, instead of having the storyline feel natural, which every season of The Bear has felt for me, this feels very much like, hey, let's try to milk this. And this is the first time I've ever felt that way about The Bear. And so I did not like that.
Not to completely defend it, but they shot 3 and 4 back to back. So that's probably why they did it.
So
don't care.
Say, I would double down on Lydia's comment, and I would say that the ending, by the way, what episode was the final? Was it 10?
10, yeah.
So I loved absolutely everything about episode 10, except how it ended. I thought
the writing stopped.
It didn't end, it stopped, right. So I thought the writing, and I know now we're still going out of order because it's episode 9, but I just want to contrast it. The writing in episode 10, the acting in episode 10.
Yeah, it's really good.
What happens in episode, everything was beautiful, funny.
It felt almost like a documentary, incredible.
Yeah, almost, I even went to the point of wondering, I'm like, so some of these people, I haven't looked this up. This is my, some of these people are real chefs.
Yes.
I didn't look it up, but watching it is like, that has to be a real chef. And the way the older chef was talking to Remy and teaching him about how to do the chicken, I was like, I want to learn from that guy right now. Like, I'm going to his school right now. It was beautiful. So much that I loved about episode 10. And then Lydia, to your point, they leave all of the questions that they asked early in the season completely unanswered for absolutely no reason. There are three questions. The question about what homegirl Sydney's going to do, there's no reason to leave that open. The question about how the review is. If you recall, that the restaurant actually opened at the end of the prior season.
That was just for family. That was a preview.
Yes, yeah. And what I'm saying is, you can't go a whole season and you're talking about the first review and then you don't give the first review by the end of that season. It's ridiculous. And then the third question is about Claire, right? His fight with Claire happened at the end of the prior season.
Yeah.
She's not in this season other than flashbacks. And the one scene with the facts go to get her and talk to her, which I actually loved. I love the facts talking to her at her job. But the whole question of Claire is unresolved. And so that's it, right? The review, the Claire and Sydney, all of those are unnecessarily left open. So I think it's malpractice, Tom, for them to do that.
It's a cliffhanger.
It's not at all. It is malpractice. But the rest of episode 10 was beautiful.
The thing about a cliffhanger is that it feels natural. It's like actions are happening and then they go, and you stop and you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? This is very much like, we're just not going to tell you.
We're just not going to tell you until next season.
Gonna
make you come back another season.
Yeah, that's not a cliffhanger. That is not a cliffhanger.
Like, what, did you just run out of film?
It does not feel like a cliffhanger. It felt very deliberate and very, I can
see the,
I can see the writing. I can see them deciding where to do this. And that's not how a cliffhanger should stop your heart. And you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Like, that didn't do that. I was like, are they about to freaking go to credits? Like, I was mad already.
Will Carvey apologize to Claire Bear? Will Libya care?
I felt exactly the same way. I was like, are you seriously going to, oh God damn it. You just did that. I was very pissed off. It was like, especially when they did that montage of different competing headlines for the review. Flashes of words and things like that. I was like, you are not serious. Oh, please, come on.
Yeah, and then he even says, he goes, and then he said, what did he say? He goes, oh, shit, or oh, something.
Yeah.
And so I don't even know what that means. Like, oh, like, you know, oh, the review is bad, or oh, the review is out, or oh, the review is better than I thought it was going to be. Like, they even did that. They, like, make it his comment kind of.
Yeah,
like,
it's just, it was just annoying. Unreadable.
Totally.
Very unsatisfied. I will be surprised if they get as many Emmy nominations next season, because people are just going to be mad. That's all.
I don't want to interject if someone wants to say something. I did want to comment on episode 9, which is before. So 10, I loved everything except how it didn't end. 9, I pretty much hated it. And the reason why I hated is that it was more being inside Carm's head, and we don't need that anymore.
We already know him.
Yes. And all his head is anguish, and that's the whole episode was pretty much being in his anguish. And I'm like, I've seen that before and I'm no longer interested in it. So I found episode 9 boring for that reason.
I can see that. I mean, because the thing is, And it's like the thing about Carmi, the first time we find, like, even the premiere, I love the premiere. Because we were in his head, but in a way that I thought was fascinating. So you get to do that once in a season. You get one of those. And I thought that the premiere did such a good job. I was 100% on board. And then when you do it again in 9, I'm like, what? Why are we doing this again? Like, I don't understand. Like, it doesn't give us any new information. It's not moving the plot forward. And it does exactly what I was talking about. Getting to the end, we're just, you know, marking time. Thank you. I was like, marking time. Yes, treading water is the word I was looking for. And I'm like, I don't, what do we, and that is not what the bear is. The bear is about, let's go. It's all about every second counts.
Kitchen
chaos. Every second counts, but it didn't.
Yeah,
apparently
yeah exactly.
It
yeah, so it's like, and I think that's a disadvantage. You said that they shot season 3 and 4 back to back. I don't think they should have, because it allowed them to do this, which did not serve the show. So, Allison, you haven't talked. What do you think?
No, you're pretty much saying exactly the sort of thing that I was thinking when I was watching it. I mean, there were like isolated things that I loved. I loved the so-called funeral for the restaurant that was,
that was really good.
Closing. I thought all of those in the scenes, you know.
Oh,
in between.
And Carmi's conversation. Talk about Carmi's conversation with the guy.
See what she's saying.
With Joel McHale.
Oh, I wanted to comment on it. That's all.
With Joel McHale.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
That was, you know, it was like one of those things where you're watching it and you're cringing as it's going on. It's a conversation that absolutely you knew was going to happen. But at the same time, it's like I could feel my hands sort of creeping up over my eyes, thinking, oh, God, I'm so embarrassed watching this.
It kind of reminded me of an abuser going back to the abuse saying,
yes,
I did this to strengthen your character.
Mm-hmm.
It was so
you did this because you're a raging a-hole.
The guy who has been living rent free in Carmi's head all this time, he doesn't care. He's a sociopath. He takes joy in harming other people, in tormenting other people. He probably hasn't given Carmi a second thought since
barely remembers last time his name.
If he did remember his name, he's the kind who'd make it look like he didn't. Absolutely. So. Going over to him and declaring all this stuff is not even going to be cleansing, because he just is going to throw it right back and
it gives him more power.
It does. Absolutely. And it makes him feel more insignificant for having actually come over to him and said that. And so it's like, you know, it's going to happen. And it's like watching a very slow, very quiet train wreck. So that was definitely painful.
From that standpoint, it was well done. From Carmi's standpoint, that was a weak move. That was such a weak move. Because he didn't even like, hey, I want to say this to you. It was just like, why? Why?
I know.
Come on, man. But yes, it was well done.
It was perfectly done. I mean, as far as the acting is concerned, it was absolutely on point.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And it feels like, and Carmi is kind of weak. So it makes sense for his character, because this guy has been like tormenting him, like you said, rent free in his head for years. Like all his insecurities, everything is all based on this dude, right?
But the irony is, of course, that some of the things the dude did to Carmi, in a lesser respect, Carmi's kind of doing it to Sydney.
Which,
if she does decide to leave, that will be the
reason,
a contributing factor.
We might find that out in season 7, whether she leaves or not.
Rare.
Yusun, any thoughts before we move on?
No, I think I thought this season was a little bit uneven for me. Like, in its total, there were I think because we've already addressed the situation that they were stretching it out. I think that the season itself kind of had episodes that didn't work for me. And it was sort of a little bit more uneven and I was a little bit bored. I think last season for me was fantastic. So it was really hard to kind of live up to that season. So for me, this was a lesser season and it was a little bit more uneven. And I found myself a little bit more, uninterested, or kind of felt like they'd spent too long on certain scenes or topics or things like that. So this season to bring us to the episode that they weren't even going to resolve anything, you know.
I know.
We need 10 episodes. And they gave us 10, and then to add insult to injury, they didn't even solve it for us or tie it up for us. So overall, I do feel a little bit annoyed with them, I'm going to say.
Yes. Join the camp. Yes. Yay. All right. Let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk The Rings of Power, Lord of the Rings of Power, however long the title actually is. But this is season 2. And before all you naysayers get to naysay, I'm going to say the one good thing, which is I really enjoyed the premiere of season 2 because we got the story from Sauron's perspective, and they told this, it was a very different story, and this time I really enjoyed it because the only thing we knew from season 1 was this random dude is evil and is really Sauron, and you're like, wait, what? And so they take the whole first episode to go all the way back to let us know how he got to where we meet him in the first place. And then we show kind of his journey and how he had a point where he had to choose between, like, this guy's like, you can go in the darkness and follow these orcs to your death, or you can choose to be a good person and get on this boat with us. And I like that he, for a second, flirted with the idea of maybe being a good guy for, like, you know, 5 minutes. It was a whole 5 minutes that he was like, okay, I'll try this whole good guy thing. And then he very quickly was like, yeah, totally killing you and taking her. Like, that I thought was hilarious. But I really did enjoy the first episode of seeing his journey and seeing him, his betrayal, and then what he, you know, trying to get his power back. And then when he gets captured by, what is the bad guy's name? I forgot.
Adar.
Yeah. When he gets captured by him and he's like, swear the oath. And he's like, I swear my oath to the Dark Lord. I was like, ah, see what you did there. You made the oath and you really say, see. And so all of that stuff, I really liked. And then you get into episode two and then we're going all over the place and it's okay. But the first episode I thought was unique and really well told and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And now you guys can go forth and crap all over it.
I didn't like the choice in 201 where basically he like there's heat and there's like he falls through a crack or whatever and he melts into like venom or whatever and then
Oh yeah, you didn't like little venom? Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was a weird stylistic choice. It's like, am I in the right franchise here? So I just I don't know. I will say that for the most part, I didn't mind 201, and then 202, that's when I'm like, oh, we're back to last season's problems. So, I don't know.
So interesting, Olivia, what you like about 201 is what you disliked about Bad Monkey, which is telling you the same story from the bad guy's perspective.
It's not the same thing because I learned new information. And
I guess
this bad guy is interesting.
So I found him uninteresting. You talked about his journey, but he didn't really have a journey. He was bad. He got beat and he's just working his way back up to being bad again. I didn't get the idea that he was flirting with being good on that journey. I was actually confused as to why he got on the ship in the first place. I'm like, if he wanted the guy's necklace, just mug him and take his necklace. Why you gotta get on the ship?
Because he was flirting with the idea of being a good guy for 5 minutes. He had five minutes.
That didn't read to me. I actually found it uninteresting. I just found it uninteresting in episode one. And then I watched two because I knew we were going to talk about it on this podcast. And two, I found even less interesting, mainly because in two, one, you have smart people being stupid repeatedly.
Competence porn. Yes.
What'd you say, Tom?
What one of my former students dubs that competence porn, where they have smart people doing stupid stuff.
Yes. I mean, and that was the whole episode with smart people being stupid.
With the rings? Yeah.
Yes. And then you have all of this hand-wringing about what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We're not going to do it. You have, what is his name, Elrond defiantly disobeys his king, gets caught, and in the next moment, he's being assigned to lead the next expedition because the king doesn't have confidence in homegirl. It's like, you don't have confidence. Was it Galadriel?
Galadriel.
So he doesn't have confidence in her for whatever reason. So I'm going to get you supervised by the guy who just 20 minutes ago disobeyed me about the most important thing in our kingdom's future. Makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, see, it made perfect sense to me because no matter how competent and qualified a woman is, she is always going to lose her position to a man.
Sexism in Middle Earth.
That's it. Exactly. It made absolute sense to me.
I think the whole thing about the false stakes to me, like the thing is called Rings of Power, which, and we all know because this is a prequel, these rings are going to get made. These rings are going to be worn. We all know this. So any time in the story where they try to convince us for whatever reason that people are not going to wear the ring, we know it's false stakes. So you have to work within that and make it interesting. And the problem was they didn't do that in this because every time Elrond's like, I'm going to go run away and make it so that you can't have the rings, you're like, all right, well, that's not going to last. Like, something's going to happen to fix that. So I think part of the problem was they were trying to convince the audience that there was really a chance that the rings were going to be taken or not going to be worn. But we've all seen Lord of the Rings. There's a reason why this, you know, it's like, so that was the inherent problem with the show. Once you get in episode two, is what I consider false stakes in this. And I do agree with you. I was like, how the heck is Elrond in charge when he literally jumped off a cliff when the king gave him an order? Because I'm like, if you trust him, then if he's jumping off cliffs to defy you, there's a reason. You should be listening to him. But if you don't trust him, why are you giving him...
Don't give him a promotion.
That's
yeah, I'm like, sent troops after him to capture him.
Right.
And then when he shows up, you're like, oh, okay.
What? Yeah, but it's the thing is, it's nothing, there is no real logic for the characters to follow in this.
Right.
We, as you, and this is a problem with prequels all the time, is that we know ultimately what happens.
Right.
And so it's very, very difficult to make that journey interesting. You know, sometimes you can do it if you're showing how a character evolved from one state and, oh, this is how they got to be what they were like when we saw them. But when it turns out to just be a series of events, it's, we know what happened. We know where it ends up. There's no question. And so it just becomes kind of a slog. And every time they try to convince us that, oh, no, this might not happen, we know it is going to happen, or that, you know, this is going to go a certain way. It's going to go left when we know it goes right.
Yes.
It just becomes tedious. You know, you roll your eyes and you look at your watch and you just go, oh, please.
One thing I will give them credit on is in episode two, instead, because what they did in season one, which I appreciate they're not doing in season two, is they don't feel compelled to tell us everyone's story in every episode. So in episode two, we really only deal with the elves and the dwarves, and that's it. We don't really have, we're not going everywhere. We're just dealing with those two stories in episode two.
Well, and the Stranger and the Harfoots as well.
All right. But I actually like the Stranger and the Harfoots, though it is getting to the point where it's absolutely ridiculous that we're not calling this dude Gandalf. Like,
seriously. Yeah. Seriously,
it is ridiculous.
Like, we know who he is, but especially when they did the thing where they're starting now. Now, what do you think your name should be?
It's I know. Oh, come on. I was like,
that was just irritating. That was just irritating.
It's ridiculous at this point that we're not calling him Gandalf, and we still have characters calling him the Stranger. And I'm like, please stop it. Just stop it.
And their promotional materials. I watched after episode two, I rewatched the intro to Fellowship of the Ring. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, that they made that so much more interesting in that 12-minute prologue. And they need to figure a way to make this more exciting, because it just feels like they're punching tickets. It's like, you know, like they got a trip, like the old AAA triptychs where you got the maps. Gotta go here. Gotta go here. Because, oh, Celebrimbor, she told me not to have anything to do with you. 5 minutes later, hey, come on in.
I know, because you knew it was going to happen. You know that he has to participate in this ring making. You know this has to happen. I will give him some credit that the manipulation here felt a little more believable. Like, I...
Because he transformed himself to make him look right. Like he was...
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, he looks like a god.
That made someone sit by the power.
Yeah.
So that, once he transformed himself and came out of the light, out of the furnace, I'm like, all right, sure. I believe now.
Well, that, yes, but if you go back to the original warning, there's a reason why she was like, don't talk to him at all. And it's like, oh, he's hungry, he's cold. Maybe I'll go talk to him. Like, it doesn't stand up.
I think that, I think it would have made more sense if he literally just came out of the fire as a different person. And then he's like, hey, I'm going to help you do this thing. And then I would have believed that better than what happened. Yes, because once he came out of the fire and he was glowing and he said he was a god and everything, and the dude bowed, I'm like, sure, I believe this now. But yeah, I agree with you. I don't understand why he went down there. I don't understand. Like, all of that just was like, what are you doing, dude? So yeah, I feel like that would have made the story cleaner and more believable. And one, he maybe didn't even look like himself. Like, he looked very different.
He had a blonde
wig. Yeah, he didn't do that. Yeah, and he just didn't do that. But whatever.
But it's also because, you know, I mean, Galadriel says, we're not going to have anything to do with this guy anymore. Don't talk to him. But she does. She leaves out the single most important piece of information, which is, don't do this because he's Sauron.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at that point, it wouldn't matter if he did all this trickery because they'd expect that out of Sauron. So, but it, you know, he doesn't know this. And that's like, that's burying the lead.
It also works a little bit because when she's talking to the king, she can't bring herself to tell the king that that was Sauron because she's so ashamed of it. And so
she does say his name, though.
Eventually, it takes a lot.
He has to pull it out of her.
They got to put, and so that's the only reason why I believe that she didn't tell him, is because she felt such shame that she got played that she doesn't want anyone else to know how badly she got played. So that's all her own personal stuff. So that's the only reason I buy it. But yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, yeah. If you're looking out for your kingdom like you claim you are, then you should tell people.
Yeah.
Like, this is the bad guy.
Impart the most important piece of information first.
All right, so let's wrap this up. We got one more show to talk about. Next up, we're going to talk about Only Murders in the Building, and we are on season four?
Four.
Three?
Four.
Four.
Four. Four.
Season four for Only Murders, and it takes place 5 seconds after the end of the last season because they're celebrating. Oh my god, we captured the killer from last season! Yay! And let's go celebrate and drink and go up and get some wine for us. And then the guy that goes to get the wine immediately gets killed.
Not the guy,
it's Jane Lynch. But I really love that that's how the end of last season happened. And then this season starts and they go up into the apartment and the body's gone. And I was like, wait, what? Didn't I just see, where'd the body go? And so the first episode is really about the characters catching up with us as the audience to realize that something's going, like Zaz is missing is dead.
It takes to the end of the episode. The bulk of the episode's about them flying to Hollywood because the podcast is being optioned to be turned into a film.
Yes, go ahead, Malik.
Well, to Tom's point, but also to the point of the writing and Steve Martin, to me, their first meeting with the executives is evidence for anyone who doesn't understand what a comic genius Steve Martin is. It's like, I'm going to remind you. It's like LeBron James dunking to remind us that he can still do it. The physical comedy, the language, the way he's going to write his number down and push it across the table, but the people to the other side of the table. Like, I haven't laughed out loud by myself watching a television show in a long time, and Steve Martin had me laughing multiple times. He's brilliant, and it was just, I loved it. I mean, even their description when they told him who was going to play them, but when they described their characters to them, it's just hilarious. So I really loved that. No, but
going to that point, when the other person finally gets the piece of paper, it just has like a four on it.
Four.
And it's like
four.
Like
four.
Four. Thousand. 100,000 million. Like,
or five. Could be five.
All of that was great because I was like, what are you guys doing? Like, what are you doing? And I like the Zach, Galifianakis. Yes.
Zach Galifianakis.
I
love that because I can never pronounce his name either. And I was just that's perfect.
It was so great because he genuinely had no idea who this dude was. He was like, and you are the guy. He was like, you're the Home Alone kid? Oh my God, what did they do to you? Like, all of that was so funny. It is so funny.
I love the comment Eva Longoria tells Mabel. Our chess group thought that you so young with the older guys was just a little creepy.
That's like that meta commentary, right?
Meta commentary. Yeah.
They're like, yes, they cast me older to get rid of that. And I was like, I see where you're going there.
All of that was just gold. Absolutely gold.
And we got our chat, bro.
Go ahead.
Last thing on that is Julie Andrews is a goddess. They had me there.
Julie Andrews. That was a conversation they were having. They were talking about Julie Andrews. And they were talking about how she was a goddess. And I was like,
Martin Short was trying to make kind of a sexy joke about Julie Andrews. And Steve Martin was like, Julie Andrews is a goddess. Go stop that right there.
I love that we got our Scott Bakula cameo, which is a callback.
Oh, that was so funny. That was so perfect. And of course, he's dressed like Zaz.
Ever. And then they finally meet, and I was like, oh, they do kind of look alike. It was so funny. Oh my God. All of that was great. And I love that this show has become so big that they literally can get anybody they want to be on this show. I was like, if Meryl Streep is on this show, you can be on this show.
Get anybody.
Yes. It was. But then they end on such a somber note. Like, once they do all their investigation, it leads back to the apartment. They see the bullet hole in the window, and then they go to the basement. And they find the bone, like her titanium bone pieces
her implants, artificial.
Yeah. And they realize
that was. I've never seen this show go dark like that before.
Yeah.
It's really surprising. Really, yeah. That really was.
I was like, are you guys trying to make me cry? Like, is that what's happening right now? It ended on such a dark note. And then the next episode picked up and it was like just where it left off. Mm-hmm. So, because he couldn't get the ashes off of him and he didn't want to be disrespectful. Oh, and it was, dark they humor. Tried to put a little humor into it, but it's still like,
you're going
to
have Saz hands.
Oh, that was horrible. That was so not cool. It got a little dark at the beginning of the second episode. But it does lead into the beginning, like they're all setting it up. And then you get the crazy woman broke out of the jail. And she was like, oh, I was worried about Zaz, so I had to break out to see if she was okay.
When opened the door and she's standing there, I literally gasped. I was like,
that was a great reveal.
And I that was that, so great.
Ahead, I love that he's seeing Zaz, who tells him, oh, I'm your subconscious.
Right. And so then you're like not sure if he's seeing this person. So I love that they do that. So like, you're not sure, like he's not sure what reality is. And she's, you know, so you're trying to, so then when he tells everybody else, like, look, I just saw such and such, they don't believe him because he's talking about he's seeing Zaz too. And so they're like, well, is he, like, what's going on? Oh, and by the way, does anybody have any idea what's going on with this whole toilet ham thing that's happening? What's happening with that? I don't understand that. Someone,
first
please
of all,
explain.
I love the new neighbors that they've just introduced, which is just
the Westies.
Yes, the Westies. Oh my God. And how utterly weird they all are. And it's funny too, because when they were doing the opening credits, you know how they always sprinkle little things in there. And they went through it and I'm going, I don't remember seeing a ham in the window before. And well,
what is with the ham? I don't get it. What's with the toilet ham?
I think they're making their own, you know, hamon, because they go into the other, remember they go into the other apartment that's all locked up. And there's a live pig in there. So I think they're making their own and passing it off as, like, you know, from Spain or Portugal or wherever it was.
I mean, but then if you get a reward, you go in and get a knife and cut a piece off. Like, it didn't even look like it was cooked. That was, you can't
no, it's
do that.
It's cured. It's cured.
It's like cured dried.
The cured.
Oh,
cured
okay.
Ham.
That was
prosciutto,
what was happening.
Kind of like, you know.
Real Serrano ham is extremely expensive and unbelievably delicious. and you could make a lot of money. I guess if you're making your own and passing it off as that, you could probably make a lot of money. So that's what I think that they're actually doing.
I was just very, very confused about the whole toilet hand thing. Like, I don't understand what's happening.
It reminded me of the SNL sketch John Hamm's John Hamm.
But yeah, the second episode was really good. It set up like the new suspects.
And finally, Steve Martin realizes that he was indeed probably the target, which everybody was trying to tell him. Boom, boom, boom.
And then he feels all this responsibility that his double. Oh, and I love the message. The tap message in. And tap in. I was like,
yeah, because I knew she was scrolling something out in her blood at the end of last season.
Right. And I love that it was tap in because I mean she's not sure. I was like, why don't you say the name of the killer in blood? But no, let's do something cryptic instead.
That was her way of saying she took the bullet for him.
Yeah,
I get it. But I thought she had an idea because she was investigating. So I thought she had an idea who might have shot her.
To be fair, she was shot like from a sniper rifle, so she probably didn't see the murderer.
Yeah, but I she was investigating it, so I thought maybe she would leave a clue. But tap in still was very poetic. I give them that. It was a very like.
Yeah, well, and it also it lets him know that he's still the target. You know, it's a warning. So, yeah.
Right. So, yeah, that was good. I think the first two episodes, they did a really good job of setting up the season, who the suspects are. And, of course, they're going to lead us on a merry way. Like we all know, we're going to have a bunch of red herrings and all those things. And
I'm all in for.
Yes. And I love our predictions because we're hardly ever right. But it still feels good when we all predict.
Wait, so did we mention Kumail Nanjiani? Did we mention him?
We haven't. He wasn't really on screen. I mean, we saw him for like a second.
For like a second. I know. So he's going to be in the season?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm really looking forward to that.
Can I say, though, the only thing that I really miss, for some reason, this season, they're not doing the little after shows. And that's a real shame because I always watched the after shows. They were, you know, I mean, there were little fluffy bits, but I always looked forward to them. And this year, for some reason, they went cheap and they're not giving us the little after shows.
I guess
I want to lodge my protest that they do that.
So this is the only show out of the six where everybody seems to be all agreed.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a terrific season so far.
It's fun.
Yeah. I love this show. I so far, I'm not going to like jinx it or anything, but so far I've liked every season of Only Murders. Mm-hmm. So
Yeah.
It's been pretty consistent. All right. So let's wrap this up. I think we're saying thumbs up, Only Murders.
Yeah.
And next time we're going to have like a whole slate of new shows that we're going to be talking about because there's a bunch of new stuff that's coming. So in preparation, you guys start watching Chaos and Slow Horses if you're watching our podcast, because that's what we're going to be talking about next time. All right. So if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them to tvcampfire@gmail.com, follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. You can listen to us on sci-fi.radio, Weedonopolis, iTunes, and YouTube. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.